I'd like you to meet someone.
My name is Phyllis.
Phyllis is an important part of the Central Standard family.
My granddaughter is Andrea Salinzi, and she's a producer on Central Standard, and I'm very proud of her.
Last week, Phyllis had a problem.
My computer started acting very peculiar and telling me that I had viruses.
I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, ideas for how to protect your computer.
Well, I'd like them to just give me an antihistamine and lay down and have it go away. It's very frustrating because I don't know what to do about it, except I know it's going to cost me money.
The computer guys will be joining us to look at the true cost of viruses and other malicious programs on your computer.
Maybe I could liken it to having had the shingles inoculation and then getting the shingles.
That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. If you think you can't even log into your inbox without seeing disappointing news these days, here's another doozy for you. You better watch which news articles and social media network links you're clicking on, because you could be triggering a computer virus as well. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today we delve deep into the world of cybersecurity. It's a world of worms, botnets, trojans, malware, spyware, fake security updates, code-embedded office documents, and social media spoof pages. All of this leads to another definition of, well, going viral. Today on Central Standard's IT department is in the house. The computer guys are here. George Costello, an independent Apple and Mac consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, the CEO of Ideality, is here and is going to help us make sense of this brave new world of security in IT. You guys have both respectively been in the IT consultative game for a very long time. What were the biggest security threats when you guys cut your teeth, and how were they dealt with then, and what are we seeing now?
Well, I can tell you that back in the late 80s, maybe early 90s, there was a rash of small viruses on the Mac back in the OS 6 and 7 days, maybe 8. And you could deal with them with like by buying a Norton antivirus or one of those programs. They weren't extensive. They weren't nearly on the scale that they are today. So you could pretty much exorcise the demons from your computer on a Mac. It was much worse on PCs.
Thomas O'Brien, how much worse was it on PCs?
It was really bad. There were there were a couple of incidents that just took down almost everybody for days, especially if you were on a network, because when they originally got into the sort of the virus makers kind of figured out about networks, they knew they only had to infect one PC on a network, and then it could go out and get all the rest of them. And so what would happen is that some poor hapless person would get that virus first, and before the antivirus software even knew it was around, it would just take down the whole network. So then you had to send an army of techs out to fix computers one by one.
One by one.
One by
one. One workstation by one workstation.
Yep.
Get on and clean it off.
Yeah, it was tough.
And that was very time-consuming.
And expensive.
And
yeah.
We're going to talk about the costs of malware and malicious programming on computers today on this show. It was tough then, but now it's fun, right? The internet has raised the stakes exponentially.
Yeah.
What's happening with the internet bound viruses and web threats that can propagate?
You know, every virus that's been around is still around.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have antivirus software on your computer, which I hope you do, when you click that little button or you see it updating and that little green bar goes across, makes you feel good that it's updated, it's updating virus definitions that are 20 years old.
Now, let's talk about virus definitions and how a basic computer virus works. What does it do to a system?
Well, it depends on the virus. I mean, they all have, in the beginning, the most common way was they'd find a hole in Windows. They'd find a way to exploit it. They'd go in to the Outlook Express address book, and they'd copy all the addresses from the address book, and then they'd just replicate the virus and send it out. I mean, that was the most common way of doing it. Now it's changed, and there's all kinds of ways. You can get infected from a web page, you know, that you visit, or various and sundry other ways. I mean, you're really only limited by the creativity of the perpetrator.
Really, some of the good viruses, the first thing they do is disable your antivirus software.
Right, so it's a wrap pretty much from the beginning.
Then they can go do what they want. And they make lots of copies of themselves and give them weird names so that you don't really notice them on your computer, so they make them harder to clean off.
Viruses are born, developed, and written by actual flesh and blood people. But has what's changed been the fact that they're making them intelligent and self-sufficient with the ability to propagate?
Well, yes, but what's really changed is they figured out how to make money on them. I mean, so they sit at their desks, you know, I'm not picking on anybody here, but maybe in Russia or China or someplace overseas where there's not much in the way of oversight, and they figure out ways to go raid your PayPal account or your credit card account or, you know, something like that, and the money all flows to them. So, I mean, it's a money-making operation.
Extortion is a big thing too, right, Tom? Wreck your system and then get this wonderful new antivirus.
I think a lot of people have seen that little screen, the things that pops across your screen, and by the time you see that, of course, it's too late.
Right.
But, you know, viruses are not – they're pretty destructive. One of the things that they typically do is they'll, like, disable stuff that you normally run. Like a lot of the recent ones that people get will hide all their files. It doesn't delete the files, which is nice, but it hides them from you so you can't see them. And then it'll corrupt your profile. If you're on a Windows machine and you've signed in as yourself, then you have this kind of profile that contains all your stuff on your computer. And they'll disable that. And to your computer, once that's gone, it's like you don't exist.
But hackers are designing these based on architectures of Windows and Apple OSs and now attacking at the application level as well.
Well, on browsers. They go after browsers. They go after Adobe PDFs.
Yeah, that's been the big
portable
one lately
document format.
Is Adobe stuff.
Right. Anything that a lot of people use – and that a lot of people will use without thinking about, that's a great vehicle for a virus.
And we'll definitely talk about the different everyday things that people can do to not be stupid and click on these things, but you know, that's up to subjectivity pretty much. Is worms different from viruses? How are worms, such as Conficker, what we saw recently, different from actual Trojans or other brands of viruses? What's unique about a worm?
Well, I don't know, George. What do you think? It's kind of like how it spreads more than anything else.
Right.
Or how it burrows down into your system.
Right.
I mean, some of these things go to great lengths to hide themselves in the obscure inner reaches, you know, of your software. And the idea is that maybe they live like behind a bush or something inside your operating system, and the antivirus software comes in and sweeps it out, and then it just peeks its head up above the ground and replicates itself again and starts over. It just really depends on how clever, you know, the writer is.
So they burrow deep into your system.
They can
and
burrow.
Hide there like a I'm trying to find a word.
You mean like
worm.
What?
Like an
like
egg.
A worm. Yeah, like a worm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's the distinction between viruses and worms is not all that important these days, but one that we all should be familiar with is a rat, which is a remote access Trojan, because that's what you get usually when you pick up a virus, mm-hmm. is that it installs a little piece of software that allows somebody else to control your computer remotely. So those are called remote access Trojans, kind of like the Trojan horse,
which
everybody remembers.
How does that architecture work? With a configured Trojan virus on your computer. What's so Trojan about it?
Well, A, you don't know that it's gotten in there, right? So the Trojan horse rolled up to the gates of Troy and they thought, oh, cool, let's bring it inside. So once it gets inside your system, then things start to pour out of it that are not so friendly.
And that's why they call them
Trojans.
Yeah.
Right.
And those are really the most dangerous ones, those and keyloggers. Those are the two that are the most dangerous because the Trojan will allow somebody else to control your computer even while you're using it. They can spin off another thread of activity and have it doing something when you're using your computer and you may not even notice it. And then The other one is...
Keylogger?
Yeah, the keylogger. Thanks for reminding me.
Tell us about keylogging.
Well, keyloggers are really pretty simple in concept. They just, a little piece of software then keeps track of every single keystroke you make.
Wow.
Which includes when you type in your password to your bank account and all that
account
other
numbers,
stuff.
Right.
Then that thing phones home, and somebody has to go through and use some software to help pick out the important stuff because, you know, if you type a lot on your computer... It's going to be buried in there someplace. So they look for strings that match credit card numbers, passwords, usernames, those sorts of things.
Is that a cousin to or distant relative to clickjacking where they, during a browser session, they'll click on stuff and you're like, what is this that I just clicked on? This window opened and I didn't open it.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing. But when you think about it, and it's also sort of related to phishing, right, the PH phishing, we tend to look at a lot of the people that are behind these things as lazy. There are some really smart ones that get out and start this stuff, but then there's this whole marketplace for this software, this malware. And so people will actually go and they'll buy it or they'll grab it and then they will spread it on their own. So they don't actually do the work of inventing it. They just do the work of perpetrating it to get more credit card numbers or IDs or whatever they're looking for.
Yeah, they call it rootkits. And they go from $50 to anywhere to up to $10,000, depending on how sophisticated they are. What are some common misconceptions about how viruses are spread and how antivirus software can combat them?
Well, I'd say the most common misconception would be that if you put it on your machine that you're safe. I can tell you from personal experience that there are a lot of people, they'll go to the store and they'll buy a copy of something or other, put it on their machine, and they never realize that they have to update the virus definition. So I've seen cases of people that are 2 years behind, you know, and they think that they're covered or protected when, of course, they're not. So that's one of the single most common
misconceptions. Or they don't look in the corner of the bottom corner of their computer to see that it's out of date. You know, it's antivirus software is not perfect, so you have to check on it every now and then, make sure it's working.
You got to pay attention. I mean, you got to know something about, you know, what you're doing.
Pay attention. This is Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall, along with George Costello, independent Mac consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, CEO of Ideology, here to discuss what the ultimate costs of computer virus, malicious programs, and other things that go bump in the digital night and day, and what to expect when your hardware catches a digital cold, so to speak. Kansas City, have you ever been exposed to digital things that go bump in the hard drive? And what did it cost you monetarily or time-wise for your work? Call up our computer guys with your symptoms, and we'll try to write you a prescription. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email your thoughts, questions, and concerns to centralstandard@kcur.org. Join the conversation. Why is there antivirus software, George, that's free, and then paid security suites as well? What's the difference?
Well, it's pretty obvious. I mean, they want to get you in, get you used to their way of doing things, make you feel good, and gives them an ongoing opportunity to try and convert you to a subscription, maybe with the promise of some additional services that look good that you might think are a good deal.
I thought that they were selfless altruists that gave you software to help protect yourself against viruses.
Exactly.
For no other reasons.
But it's good. I mean, that's not to say that this free antivirus software is not good. I know lots of people that use it, and they say, hey, it works great.
Speaking of altruism and adulation for their customers, Microsoft Security Essentials is an example of a free service. Do they not feel the need, companies such as Microsoft of that size, for a paid program because they're Microsoft?
Well, what they do is they kind of change the license as it goes along. So originally it starts out as free. Then it's just free for single, you know, non-commercial users, and they start charging corporate users or people that have multiple computers that they cover with the same software. So a lot of them have a free tier. Mm-hmm. And then a various set of paid tiers above that that'll give you other services which you may or may not need or may not like, but they're all valid.
Freemium.
Yeah. I kind of look at it as sort of preventative and postventative. You know, antivirus software is preventative in the sense that it's to keep you from getting infected by some of this malware. But one thing that I found interesting when I was kind of looking at some stuff prepping for today was that there is one company that I know of that actually says if you get a virus,
oh, yeah,
while you're protected by our software, we will remove it for free. You just got to contact them, and then they'll remote into your computer and do that. And I thought that was kind of cool.
And could I make a point here? I mean, one of the things that we discover from time to time is that there are computer users out there who don't have a router in their system. We were just talking to Andrea before the show started about her grandmother, and it turns out that her grandmother doesn't have a router in her system. Well, a router is sort of like a Swiss Army knife. It installs between either the cable modem or the DSL modem that you have and your computer. It sits in the middle, and it acts as a firewall. And everybody needs this, whether it's hardware or software. Hardware is generally better than software. They're not expensive. You know, you're talking $30-$40. You can get a perfectly good one. It includes wireless capability these days. But please, if you're listening at home and you don't have a router or you don't even know what we're talking about here, then
you're referring to the routers that Cisco Systems is famous for manufacturing.
Belkin, D-Link, I mean, there's a zillion of them out there.
Look at it this way. If you don't have a router, it's like having a house with 65,000 doors, and they're all open.
They're all open.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, so the router closes down almost all of those doors and allows only certain traffic to pass through the key ones, the three or four that you need.
At the same time, though, Tom, for users like Phyllis with paid AV programs who are still getting hit, what's the fundamental flaw? Because a lot of it, what we call in the IT industry, is triggered on the client side or the actual user.
Between the ears.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, that's the most embarrassing thing for most people to really think about. But we just click on stuff without reading it. And we have just seen recently, as a matter of fact, a whole number of these viruses. Sometimes we call them drive-bys, but you'll get a little thing that'll show up on your screen, and it says "click me." So what do? You click it, but instead of doing that, if you read it, you might realize that it's not something that you want to click.
You're talking about something like Thomas O'Brien, see the photos from your St. Patrick's Day party or something like that.
Well,
like,
they even masquerade as software updates. They make you think that there's something essential. I mean, you really have to pay attention.
Well, you got to know what to expect.
Yeah. I mean, if it looks like something wants to install on your computer, you better be comfortable with what it is. Otherwise, you should say no.
Yes, think first and pull the trigger
later.
Second.
Yeah,
right. Later on. You don't need to answer right away.
Right.
Ken in Lee Summit, you're on Central Standard. Do we have Ken? Hello, Ken? Nope. Bruce, you're on Central Standard.
Hey, I feel so fortunate to have got on the show. I'm standing in the bank line, and I didn't have to miss part of it. I still have to go on archives and listen to this show because it's so interesting. Here's my question.
Thank you, Bruce.
In relation to the, I forget which one said it, but on the keystroke counting on software that gets in and counts your keystrokes, would changing your user ID and password on a regular basis defeat that?
Is the answer no, Tom?
The answer is no.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's not counting.
Get out of that line and go home right now.
Right, right.
It's not counting keystrokes. Yeah. It's recording the keystrokes.
Right. Okay. It's not counting them. It's actually keeping track of what you're actually typing in, the number of characters and the complexity of your passwords. Right, Tom?
That's correct.
And any language, right, yeah.
So what's the solution for Bruce so he doesn't have to get out of line in the bank?
Well, he's going to have to just finish the line. But, you know, the deal with the keystroke logger or any of this other stuff is it takes a toll on your system. If you have antivirus software and it's up to date, it's probably okay. Just go home and run a scan and run a thorough, full scan, not just a quick scan. And then you might go to something like Malwarebytes or another one of those sites that'll scan online to use more than one device. Once you've done that, then you've done all that you can really do.
Well, and there's one other point here, too, is that, as I said earlier, just because you've got antivirus software on your machine doesn't mean that it's going to be effective every minute of every day. Once you install any program, you need to go into the preferences or the properties and make sure that you set up things like the time that it updates, maybe daily, virus definitions, and so on. So,
coming from the IT and business process risk background, we know that there are detective controls and that there are preventative controls. Talk about antivirus programs that detect threats but do little in maybe preventing some of the threats from actually getting through, because they sweep for the viruses and they detect them, but how do you keep ultimately from them rushing your offensive line, so to speak?
Well, you know, they're hammering you every day all the time anyway.
Right.
So the fact is that there's not much more that you can do. They actually do – most of our antivirus software does prevent as well as detect. What happens, though, is that you have what is known as zero day, right, the day the virus comes out, or somebody has changed it just a little tiny bit, and now it's new. So it may escape detection by your antivirus software. So you have to really watch out for the zero-day threats, the ones that come at you when they're brand fresh new that get past your antivirus.
That zero-day threat is an interesting phenomenon in the hacker community and in the security research community, because it means essentially that these viruses and these malicious programs are being written faster than the vendors can patch them.
I don't know that I'd say faster, but the guys, you know, it's like the old arms race technology, you know, where you're constantly trying to keep up with the threat from the other side. The guys that write these things, it really becomes a question of not how fast can they write them, but how creative can they be in devising a new method of getting into your machine or getting around the existing barriers.
Thomas, is it about speed or creativity or both?
It's probably both. You know, the if I were an antivirus software company, I would live in fear every day that somebody comes out with something at 2 a.m. that, you know, we're not ready for. It's got to be a really tense kind of job to have. But those guys are great because they are staying in the game the whole time. And there's a lot of antivirus companies that have been around for, you know, 20 years now. So got to have our hat off to them, so to speak. You know, I have to tell you, there's a couple things that you can do if you are prone. There are actually people that are prone to getting viruses or malware. I kind of characterize people, and you may see this in yourself, but if you tend to click first and think later, or if you sometimes are a little impulsive, or if you just kind of do lots of things at the same time and maybe don't pay a lot of attention to each one of them. We all do this from time to time. But there's a kind of a personality type that really tends to get these little pieces of malware.
And they're likely to click on something
right.
with Robert De Niro right. saying, hey, I got some nice new dresses
for you.
Right
so
there.
So this is
nice
what we did. We found one like this, a person like this, very nice person, and they're great. But they needed a little help to remind them to slow down. So we turned their antivirus software onto voice mode. So now whenever they go to a site that might have some malware on it, this little voice comes out and goes, threat detected, threat yeah. detected. And once we explained that was actually the antivirus software working and not something else, it helped.
The other thing is that these guys that write these viruses capitalize on the attitudes and behavior of people at home. Like, for example, when Napster was in its day and people were like getting music, you know, for free, commercial music downloaded, these guys would go and they would infect the websites or the software packages. LimeWire was that way. And if you downloaded a LimeWire package and installed it on your machine, you were installing viruses right along with the software itself. The other thing is they'll go and they'll infect a website that dispenses porn, for example, because they know, you know, a lot of people like to do that on their machine. So when you go to certain websites, in the background, you're getting a download of some malware of some kind that can go into your computer. So they take advantage of natural human tendencies to get something for nothing.
And something interesting in this day and age, the flow of news, for instance, fake Osama Bin Laden mm-hmm. exclusive video footage, or yeah. Barack Obama bowling a 300, for instance.
Wow, did he?
I don't know. You yeah. want to click on the link and
yeah,
find
send
out?
Me, send me that link.
Is that the idea? Of,
yeah, that's exactly it. Social. Sure. They call it social engineering, but we're all curious. We want to know stuff. So if it just happens to snag that curiosity bone, then you're cooked.
Greg emails in to centralstandard@kcur.org and says one concern that he has is the security of his personal information on his Android phone. The apps list permissions required before we install them for the market, but is there any way to really know what information they access and where it's sent to? Let's talk mobile security for a second.
It's in its infancy at this point. I'm holding in my hand a report from Intego, which they just released an antivirus application for the iPhone and the iPad. And they're saying now that we're at a point where these wireless technologies, that we're in need of antivirus-type protection, because this is a growth industry. We're going to see a lot of it in the future.
Bob from Lake Quivira wanted to know if smartphones were as susceptible as computers. McAfee was bought by Intel specifically, in part at least, to design security design structure for mobile chips. And so what role does antiviruses coming on mobile devices play in the security conversation?
Well, they can build in some protections at a very root level in the chip itself to reject certain types of things. But, you know, I mean, it's an ongoing war. I mean, nobody's ever going to win it. Go ahead.
This is a pretty good point to mention, that the people that make the smartphone operating systems, and also that make your computer operating systems, Microsoft, Apple, they are constantly updating their systems with security updates. So they are in the game also. And if somebody finds an operating system vulnerability, then Microsoft, Apple, and the others are very quick to try to repair that so that it's not there anymore. So the first line of defense is making sure that your operating system, including the iOS on your iPhone and the Android system on your smartphone, are up to date.
They call that a patch.
They call it a patch. And Microsoft does Patch Tuesday. I think it's like second Tuesday of every month. But they will also release critical security updates at any time. And then they'll push them down to all the computers that are set for auto-updating.
And that's common with Oracle and Adobe Systems and all of
right.
your major usual suspects.
Yeah, so we're not game. Totally alone in the world. It's not like us plus our antivirus software and that's it. You know, we have an ally in the people that make our operating systems as well.
Thomas O'Brien is the CEO of Ideality, along with George Costello, independent Mac consultant, here discussing things that go bump on your operating system and in your applications with your computer. Kansas City, have you ever been exposed to digital things that go bump on your hard drive? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Time for a break. When we return, how hackers actually count on our online behavior and curious web surfing habits to target our machines. That plus the Tech Trends Lightning Round when we return on Central Standard. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. If you may be curious to know about a coworker's salary or the latest celebrity gossip, you might want to think again. You could be triggering malicious programs on your computer by clicking on this hot, juicy information, some of which can go around or straight through your antivirus software. With us to help make sense of these threats and help us stay well-behaved to avoid catching a digital bum rush are George Costello, independent Mac consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, CEO of Ideality, the computer guys here discussing cybersecurity and the themes therein. Call up our computer guys with your symptoms, and we'll write you a prescription, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Also, you can email your thoughts to centralstandard@kcur.org. Dave in Brookfield asked, this one's for you, George. He has a Mac, iMac, running on OS 10 Lion, and he's always understood that you don't need antivirus, is what he says. Is that true, George?
No, it's a kind of a tradition. Macs haven't really been plagued by viruses to any extent at all, particularly since the introduction of OS 10. But to say that you don't need them is not true. What's going to happen is someday somebody is going to say, wow, you know, this Mac universe is ripe for the picking, and they're going to create a virus that's going to spread all over because most Mac users do not have any antivirus software on their computers. So the first one that hits the Mac universe is going to make headlines.
What about fake security updates? Dorothy from Overland Park asks, how can we tell the good updates from the bad ones? Sensory perception is very important in the user experience, isn't it, Tom? Because if you get a flashing warning on your PC screen saying your computer is infected, it might not be. But when you react to it, then it is.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. And it is tough. I mean, you just have to be – it's kind of like being aware of your surroundings when you're traveling as a tourist mm-hmm. in another country or something like that. You need to just kind of know what is going to show up on your computer. The best thing to do is to look at your own antivirus software and know how it works.
And update the virus definitions, which is very important because
right.
the common misperception is that people can just install it. It'll sit there. It'll act like a big – offensive lineman, pretty much, and just block everything out.
You have to become a skeptic every time you see a dialog box on the screen. I mean, you have to make a judgment about whether or not this is a good idea. And if it looks like it's something essential, like Tom said earlier, you can say no. It'll come back, you know, and ask again. And that may give you enough time to either check it out or talk to somebody else or whatever, but you need to learn to be a skeptic.
What are the most common messages of these dialog boxes that pop up, that this is not a trusted site, that this site may contain malicious programs? Is that pretty much the message?
Yeah, they kind of play on those types of things or the more kind of positive, enticing messages about luring you to something. But, you know, the pop-ups are getting a little bit – they're getting more sophisticated. And they're showing up, like if you have Internet Explorer on your, for an example, on your PC, and maybe you have it squished down so it's not showing on your screen, it's still running. So you can get a pop-up on your screen that looks like it came out of nowhere. It doesn't really make you think like it came from Internet Explorer, even though you still have it running. So there are some examples of things that can just sort of take you by surprise.
There are also stuff like Facebook log-on pages and stuff designed to look like trusted websites as well.
Right. Any email is the easiest thing for a person to avoid getting into trouble with because you know who you get email from. And so, you know, if you get email from something that's new or something that's different and wants you to click on it, you should be pretty skeptical because it'll take you to those fake login pages, those – you know, you'll get an email that'll say your eBay account has been compromised. Right. Click here and, you know, don't do it.
So the message here, fellas, is Angelina Jolie is not on the beach in Sardinia. Know. Don't click on that.
Right.
Ed in KCK, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, good morning, everybody. And I'm a retired network administrator myself, and I've had several times here recently an interesting pop-up on my Firefox browser, relatively new Windows 7 machine running properly updated Firefox. And the window that comes up says something, and that's the word it uses, is trying to up-trick your browser into accepting an update. And instead of giving you the click here to fix this trap, it just says contact your system administrator or ISP. And I was curious, is that a warning that is now built into the later updates of Firefox that actually is what it appears to be, an actual legitimate warning that something is trying to put a fake update into the browser?
What version of Firefox are you running?
Oh, I wish I could tell you. I'm not sitting in front of the machine. It is whatever the latest version available for download from Mozilla is.
That would be 5.
Yeah, I think it is 5.
Firefox has some pretty good new features in it, and typically it's either designed to make you heckle your network administrator.
Yeah, which would be me.
Yeah,
right. But, you know, generally you have to think about what's in it for them. You know, if it's telling you to do something, if there's a payoff, then it's probably something you need to be really careful with. If it's not calling you to action, then what's the problem?
Thomas, can you enlighten Ed on how he might be aware that Firefox is actually open source, so a lot of the sort of security development infrastructure is kind of cut and paste, kind of touch and go?
You know, the browser manufacturers are just kind of like your OS manufacturers, right? They're always updating their browsers to be smarter and to prevent more of this stuff from happening because they know they're vulnerable too. One of the problems is they update more frequently enough that you cannot be used to what that browser looks like. So you really need to spend some time when you get a new browser and it says Firefox has been updated. Mm-hmm. Look at what's new and spend a little time with it so you'll know what's going on.
Also, my general philosophy is whenever they bring out a new version of any program, I don't care if it's Firefox or whatever it is, typically there is not enough beta testing that's done before it's released to the public, and the public becomes the beta tester. So the old expression, don't install a .0 of anything, is true. I mean, if 5.0 comes out, or for that matter, Mac OS 10.7, you know, don't put it on your machine. Let the people find the problems, fix the bugs, and so on, and then later you can come along.
So the lesson here is watch for the zero because there are zero-day threats that are based on those new programs that hackers are looking at. Right?
Sure, they find the new stuff, yeah.
Vicky in Parkville, and thanks, Ed, for calling in, by the way. Vicky in Parkville,
yes.
Welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. My question was, or my comment is, I'm an AOL user, and so I have McAfee automatically through them, but it really slows down my system every time I seem to get an update of, you know, that they need to install more spyware or virus, antivirusware. So I feel like there's a big trade-off between how fast my system's going to run and how well I'm protected. Is that just because my computer's 10 years old and it can't keep up with, you know, all the stuff?
Partly, Vicky, but also some antivirus software is more resource-intensive than others, and McAfee has been known to be one of those that does use more system resources than some of the other antivirus software, so it can slow down your machine quite a bit.
And you may have things on your machine you don't know they're there. There are a couple places you could go online. You could go to pcpitstop.com and have them do a remote scan. There's also you can get a spyware scan at Allume, that's Allume.com. You have to jump through a few hoops on that site, but they can both remotely do a scan and give you a status report.
Thank you, Vicky, for your comments and calling in here on Central Standard. Speaking of AOL, we have a little anecdote about AOL on our Central Standard blog at kcur.org/Central Standard. We also mention and go into detail about some of the antivirus programs and free websites you can go to that George just mentioned. You can go to centralstandard.org or kcur.org/Central Standard to check out that blog there. Is security becoming the next killer app? The big AV firms are losing market share a little bit. Is security development becoming more entrepreneurial, fellas?
You're going to have security problems on every platform. I mean, the rise of tablets and iOS and Android is a whole new market for the security industry.
It better be entrepreneurial. That's what we need.
I ask that because there are 20 or more security startups preparing to go public on the stock exchange in the coming months. And
nothing wrong with that.
Developing new apps.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the older, you know, there's a life cycle to corporations also. So, you know, I think the new stuff keeps everybody on their toes.
What's up with the cloud and security in that?
Oh, please.
Well, you know, that's a good one.
Let's not go there. You know, the cloud is so many different things anymore.
Right.
And, you know, you can consider that Google is the cloud if you store your documents there and that sort of thing. Apple is about ready to do a big cloud play, Amazon. But, you know, each of those has its own little slice of the market and its own particular way of dealing with it. For instance, I'll give you a real quick example. Amazon, if you want to use some of its cloud computing resources, you need to have a security key already built on your computer, and it's a much more secure communicating method so they can authenticate who you are and so you can authenticate that you've gotten to the right Amazon server. So some of the cloud companies are very aware and very careful about security.
What's a general tip each one of you can give us about being vigilant with your own IT security?
Here's a tip I'll give you. Let's suppose you spent $750 on your computer, and let's suppose you get a virus, and say you call somebody to come and fix it, or you take it to a store. It could easily cost you half of the cost of your computer just to fix that virus problem, and that's just once. So I think it's real important to think about the economic cost to you of a problem, and that should erase some of the complacency if you happen to be guilty of that, and make you kind of force you into thinking a little bit more proactively about that stuff.
George, you have anything to add?
Well, I think I already mentioned it. And just at the most basic level, you got to have a router in your system. You got to have a firewall between you and the outside world. It all starts there. And if you don't have that, then everything else is secondary.
This is Central Standard on KCUR.org, 89.3 FM, streaming live on KCUR.org. George Costello is an independent Mac consultant. Thomas O'Brien is the CEO of Ideality. There are computer guys, our own IT departments, discussing cybersecurity, among other things, and technology experts. It's time for...
It's time now for a technology news lightning round with Thomas O'Brien and George Costello.
She likes you guys.
How about that?
She likes you guys. Google's purchase of Motorola's mobility unit, some $12.5 billion at last check. What is that about?
They bought a huge patent portfolio. There's so much patent defending going on these days, especially in the mobile space, that Google had a very thin patent portfolio compared to some of these other big companies, and they needed to pick that up. Now, the side benefit of picking up Motorola at mobility is the fact that that's a hardware maker of things like a tablet and smartphones. So they kind of got two things in one. But my guess is that it was the patent portfolio first and the hardware manufacturing second.
George, why is that patent portfolio important?
Well, today everybody's suing everybody else over patent infringements. I mean, it's become a cottage industry. But beyond that, even Android, the operating system, is under attack on three or four fronts. So it seems to me that this gives them another way of, dealing with that market, having...
And they're under attack from Apple,
who
for a minute last week in the trading session, passed up Exxon in
market value, yeah.
That's huge.
Well, it was huge. I assume everybody also noticed that in the week leading up to the compromise on the debt limit, as the Treasury's monies were slowly draining out, on Wednesday of that week, Apple had more cash on hand than the U.S. Treasury.
Wow.
So that was, of course, they don't have it anymore because now that the debt limit has been raised. But Apple has always had a giant cash hoard. It's on the order of $65 or $66 billion.
So at that time, Steve Jobs could have said, I got you. Let's stop this. I got you.
Something like that.
He could have raised and they wouldn't have been able to see his bet.
Thomas.
Yes.
Who's anonymous?
That's a good question. It's a big group of people. That's, Anonymous is this kind of loose group. It has no leader. It's leaderless group of I'm not sure if hackers, hacktivists, I guess
hacktivists,
we were talking about
hacker
that before.
Collective.
Hacktivists is a good term. Social.
I have mixed feelings about things like Anonymous because I kind of like the spirit of the activist spirit of trying to right what are seemingly wrongs. But also I kind of have a little problem with some of the illegal or very marginal activities.
Like breaking into the Bay Area Rapid Transit system.
Yeah, like
or
defacing
BART.
Their website, right.
But they got about 2,000 different user profiles, which include numbers and emails, right?
Well, they claim that they – not just that, but, last week they released the news that they had something like 75 they'd broken into 75 different law enforcement computer systems around the country. And, sheriff's departments in Versailles, Missouri.
Well,
I don't know
cities.
If that was one of them, but in small cities.
Right.
And then they started to release the information that they found. And that's where I get a little bit concerned because that can actually injure people and their, and put them at risk.
And speaking of the cross-section of IT security and society, the UK, blimey. They're thinking about limiting the bloody social networking access.
That's not new for the UK. There are a lot of restrictions on individual freedoms over there.
I like the fact that they are using face recognition technology to identify people in the looting and rioting last week.
They got cameras everywhere in the UK.
That's pretty easy when people were tweeting on, I just came up off this new pair of shoes.
Yeah,
out in,
sometimes it's not very hard. It's just shoe recognition more than face recognition.
Out on Savile Row, I just came up off that, and I'm tweeting now.
You are looking pretty good today.
Speaking of looking good or not so good, 22 fake Apple stores discovered in China?
Leave it to those resourceful Chinese. I mean, if there's anything that they can figure out a way to clone it, they'll do it. Somebody took pictures of Apple stores in the U.S. and went back to this town whose name I can't pronounce and built more than 22 stores, which actually were carrying real Apple product, but they weren't real Apple stores in the sense that they were owned by Apple corporate.
Do you smell a rat in terms of the...
It's what the Chinese do. I mean, they've cloned the Boeing 707. You know, they're famous for doing this kind of stuff.
Speaking of rats, Operation Shady Rat, Remote Access Trojan. What's going on with that? There was a recent article in Vanity Fair talking about this is really a pervasive, wide conspiracy, Tom.
Yeah, this is a big one. There was a paper, I think, at the Black Hat Conference a couple of weeks ago in Las Vegas by McAfee, which had discovered a single source for this kind of single code or command and control computer. They aren't released. They're being very cagey about this. So they're leading you to believe that it's a nation that's behind it. But one wonders. Nobody's really saying
it. Are there any theories based on what you've read and based on what was presented at the Black Hat Conference?
Well, you know, it would be irresponsible to say. But no, you know, the thing is that it's been going on for quite a long time.
Right.
It's very, very high quality. So it's right up there with Stuxnet in terms of its capability to do harm.
And in terms of the speculation that there is an institution or a state behind its inception.
Yeah, and that's the scary part.
Well, we know that this has been going on for years. In fact, there was a segment on 60 Minutes a year or two ago in which they admitted that nuclear secrets had been compromised, that all the basic stuff, all of our basic secrets have been stolen.
Just rest assured that our government is working the same way.
No doubt.
Yes.
Let's talk about events coming up this fall. Anonymous, as we mentioned before, which is on opposite day, not so anonymous, is doing something or planning something for November. What is it, Tom?
Well, they got mad at Facebook. Now, this is an example of why a leaderless organization isn't necessarily, you know, all that organized, because a little group that's attached to Anonymous said, we want to shut down Facebook because Facebook is basically the biggest single repository of identification information in the world. And they don't like the way Facebook is treating people.
So they want to shut it down because of the discussions about privacy.
Right, to punish Facebook.
Why are they mad at Facebook, George?
Beats me. I'm not a Facebook person.
Is it just looking at the popularity of it and...
No. I think that they're thinking that Facebook is playing fast and loose with private information of its users. I think Facebook does it generally a pretty good job of that, but they don't always give you the tools that you really need and put them out in front of you so that you know that they're there to protect your identity.
In the past, though, I mean, there were some things that they were doing that they shouldn't have been doing. So,
does Facebook sell information to the government, or are they complicit with the government in investigations?
That's what they're alleging.
That's what they're alleging. They're actually meeting with the UK Home Secretary on this social media during a civil disturbance business, so it'll be interesting to see.
It is getting interesting.
What happens with that. George, Apple's are buying back old phones and Macs. Why?
Well, I guess they're trying to be a good corporate citizen. They've always had a recycling program to some degree. But at their headquarters in Cupertino, anybody can take anything in and they'll accept it and recycle it. But they've recently expanded their program of recycling. In fact, they'll pay people for their old gear. You can find more information about this online through the Apple Store, or the company that they use is called WeRecycle.com, and you can go there and get some more information. The values on old equipment are determined by a company called Power On. It's a third party, and they make you an offer, and if you choose to accept it, they'll send you a check and so on and so forth. So, you know, any recycling is good.
Well, let's put on our John Hodgman and Justin Long jackets and go Mac and PC here. Tom, let's start with you. What is TABCO? And I'm sure George has some counterpoints about whether or not it's an iPad killer. So
yeah,
start with you, Tom.
I don't know what TABCO is, but their release is at 11 o'clock. So in about 5 minutes, we're all going to know.
11 o'clock Central Time. Who's releasing it?
They've got a little viral. They don't know who's behind TABCO. And there's a little
wow.
this viral video that's been going around that shows wow. a bunch of people marching like lemmings over the edge. But then TABCO shows up with its tablet. And that saves everybody and makes them smile.
So this could be an example of guerrilla marketing, which is really from a gorilla company.
Yep, it could be. We don't know. But
right.
it's a real product. We do know that.
What would it take to bring out a product, George, that would be an iPad killer? What type of capabilities would it have to have?
Well, you know, they're all similar. They all have similar capabilities. And it's not so much the device as it is the infrastructure to support the device. One of the problems in the Android business is the Android store. There are multiple places you can go to download software and so on, and they're not really quite as well supervised or controlled as the Apple store. And there's pro and con on this. I'm not saying that that's
over-controlled.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it's necessarily a good idea. It's just disjointed more in the Android space. So you get a more seamless, easier experience when you deal with the Apple Store. There's no question in my mind about that.
Going back to the announced deal of Google to buy Motorola's mobility unit, does it now become not disjointed for Google now that they're essentially trying to get in the hardware business?
Not until they set up the infrastructure so they can make it really easy for end users to learn about and download and bill and so forth the add-ons, whether it's music or applications or video, whatever it happens to be.
Thomas, what is ShelterCat?
If you like to play with kitty cats, this is a way you can make that kitty cat chase around a rat in its cage at a shelter somewhere else in the country just by logging into a web page. It's kind of fun.
Rats, kitty cats, bugs, Trojans, all the stuff that you don't want to touch, maybe in a conversation or definitely on your computer. Thomas O'Brien of Ideology is here talking with us about cybersecurity, and so is George Costello, independent Mac consultant. Computer guys, thank you very much for joining us here on Central Standard today.
Thanks
a
lot.
Our pleasure.
Tune in tomorrow for a look at the Busker Festival coming to Lawrence and a conversation with Peregrine Honig about her Bravo-inspiring golf cart design for the shuttle cart program at the Nelson Atkins Museum. And you'll find our show's archives at kcur.org. Go to kcur.org and click on Central Standard. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Bill Anderson. Up to date is next. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.